Hey everyone, Shane here. I'm recording this on March 20th, 2020. I haven't put out a podcast in a couple of weeks, mostly because I've about 6 to 8 interviews recorded from a couple of months back, and I'm not sure that any of them are especially relevant to this point in time that all of us are going through right now. So instead of just taking a back seat and allowing the podcast to slide, I wanted to record at least one solo episode of the show with some early response to what's happening and to offer what might be, or what I hope to be, might be some support or guidance to you wherever you are in the world. Coronavirus / COVID-19 are just about all that anyone's talking about right now. I've been paying some attention to this since about the middle of February, mostly because a few of the people that I pay attention to were themselves paying attention to what was happening around the world and talking about it in a way that made me sit up and take notice. I include in this two of my favorite podcasters, Tim Ferriss and Sam Harris. Now, first, let me acknowledge for a moment that yes, both Tim Ferriss and Sam Harris, even their names sound alike, both Tim Ferriss and Sam Harris are white American men. And if anything, what we need now more than ever is a collective global response encompassing men and women, no matter what their belief systems are, no matter what their nationality is, no matter what their ethnic makeup is, no matter what stage of life they're in. But still, I'm grateful for the work that Tim and Sam have been doing on this to draw attention to the situation in the weeks before it came to what it is now and what it's going to be. I think both of them have done an exceptional public service in utilizing their platforms and their audiences to get some people to take this thing seriously. Now, how should we respond? This short podcast is not going to be all about me and my opinions or how my day-to-day is going to change, because none of that really matters to anyone but me. But still, if what I say over the next few minutes is going to mean anything at all, I think it's important to give you some background to my perspective on what's happening right now. The last global crisis, the global financial crash that hit between 2007 and 2008, and which so many people around the world felt the effects of for a number of years after that, was, I suppose, a watershed moment for me and for a lot of people. If I can take you back to 2008 for a second, I was just past my 30th birthday. I was working as a journalist for a small publishing company in Ireland. I was getting ready to get married to my girlfriend, Lorraine. I was working every day on the revolutionary technology that was the developing internet, and I'd done absolutely zero self-work. The important questions of who I am, of what I value, of what I want to be in the world, all of those were unanswered and unaddressed at that point. I had by then, in 2008, already struggled very regularly with depression for probably more than 15 years or so. And when that crisis struck and the company I was working for went into liquidation, the company Lorraine was working for shut its doors too, I really had no idea how to respond. We moved home 5 times in 3 years as we tried to chase some sort of balance, some sort of equilibrium, some sort of financial way out. When the economy here started to recover in 2012, 2013, 14, I was still nursing the effects of those 4 to 5 years of turmoil. And it wasn't until towards the end of 2016 that I eventually hit what would be a rock bottom. Now, that rock bottom was mostly financial. All our debt had come home to roost. We realized that we'd been living in a circular debt landscape for about 6 to 7 years, kicking lots of different cans down the road and hoping against hope that some big change would just happen all by itself and save us. A strange thing happened when that rock bottom happened. The world kept turning. The sun came up the next day and it set that night. And I knew that there were at least 2 avenues I could take. One, I could hold up and hope that the difficulty would just pass somehow. Or two, I could take some steps to improve my immediate situation. I chose number 2, or maybe to be a bit more accurate, number 2 chose me. Now, I know I'm extraordinarily fortunate to be here and to be able to speak these words, because those crisis years claimed so many lives. We probably will never know how many young people with so many years to live and so much still to give lost their lives or took their own lives during that time. I realize now, looking back, that I somehow was able to borrow from some Stoic philosophy to be able to split everything in life into the things we can control and the things we can't, and to only concern ourselves with the things we can control. Now, I'd be lying if I said that that was intentional at the time, or anything even close to intentional. I probably had never heard of Stoic philosophy at that time. So I was lucky and privileged that somewhere deep in me there was something that set me on that course. One of the most important things and one of the most miraculous things that I noticed during that time was the generosity of spirit of people everywhere. Many people who I just did not know, had never met before, I got to know during this time when I was trying to rebuild things from the ground up. Now, yes, there's so much greed and inequality in the world, but for the most part, and even more so when things turn bad, people help people. So let's talk 2020 and this thing that all of us are going through right now. I'm going to start with the bad stuff, but quickly I'm going to move on to things that are, I think, a bit more hopeful for the future. The future that will be fast-tracked to us over the next few months and the next few years. So, the reality of where we're at. This is, I think, almost certainly going to be a lot more challenging than those years of crisis and austerity around the world between 2008 and 2012 or 13. Because while that was mostly about money, the implosion of the financial system, the crosses all of us as individuals and a collective had to bear to bail out banks in Ireland and the UK and Europe and the US and around the world and to get our economies back on their feet, this right now, 2020, is about something much, much more. This crisis is about life itself. This crisis is about our physical health. This crisis is about the air that we breathe into our lungs. Those who are suffering with the illness from this virus are suffering with the terror of being unable to get enough air into their lungs. It's tragic and it's terrifying. And for that reason, this is much more damaging in the medium to long term, even after this virus is brought under control. And I fully expect it will be brought under control at some point in the next 3 to 12 months. The damage wrought by the virus and illness itself is the primary damage, but there are many, many other potential secondary damages, economically and financially for sure, but also to the mental and physical health of people everywhere who manage to escape the worst of what the virus will bring. Fear and anxiety are completely off the charts right now, globally, as we pay hyper attention to what's going on in the world. For the past month or so, the Guardian newspaper online has been running a live blog with a deep red warning header. And this live blog has been updated every few minutes with the latest terrible news from somewhere in the world. Our email inboxes have been slammed with COVID-19 related messaging as all businesses try to respond to the situation by changing their email marketing and communications. Our social media feeds are full to the brim of fear and terror and horror. Now, I'm not saying this is completely unjustified. There is no doubt that this is a big moment in the history of the world, so it's natural and obvious that the media would respond in this way. But what I am saying is that the vast majority of us, those of us who are not working in frontline health services or working in the supply chain that keeps food and supplies moving around the world, and those of us who are fortunate not to have been visited by the worst of what this virus has to bring, the vast majority of us still have choices here. So, let's get to what I hope is the more hopeful bit of this podcast. Number one, the most powerful thing we can do right now as individuals is choose where we place our attention. Unlike even 2008, when the likes of Facebook and Twitter and YouTube were in their infancy, we now have access to almost everything, almost everywhere, almost in real time. Now that's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's a blessing that we can arm ourselves with information and viewpoints, and we can educate ourselves quickly and for free in a way we could never ever have imagined in the history of humanity. But on the other hand, it's a curse, because if we allow this unfiltered onslaught of information to buffet us unchecked, we will be quickly overwhelmed by fear and anxiety, and maybe in time by rage and anger and violence too. So the most powerful thing we can do right now is choose where we place our attention. I'm not advocating pretending that this is not happening. It is. What I am advocating is that you limit your exposure to news and social media to only what's necessary for you to keep yourself informed of this situation, and to use all the other attention you have available to you to do something different, to create something, to change something, to study something, to read something, but to do something different. Number two, we can choose to think of this moment as a general and collective pause and reflection on who we are, on what our values are, on who we want to be in the world. There are people who will pay a heavy, heavy price for this collective pause. Financially, yes, but finances can be recovered. Thousands of people have already lost their lives, and their loved ones will carry this mark for the rest of their lives. Everyone who will die or see people close to them die are heroes. All the healthcare workers all over the world are heroes. Now, I don't describe them as heroic in a glib way. They're heroic in the way of heroes of literature and film and the storytelling that runs over humanity for millennia. Often, sometimes very often, the hero does not make it to the happy ever after. But still, they played a key role in creating that new world. Many, many people will pay a price in this moment, and out of the price they pay, they will have made a massive contribution. And in some cases, they'll have paid the ultimate contribution for the creation of a new way of being. Because we're not going back to normal after this. We can't hope or expect to go back to normal, because the normal that we had experienced for the last 20 to 40 years was killing us slowly through chronic lifestyle illnesses, and it was killing the planet quickly. Number three, at almost the exact same moment, all over the world, people are suddenly waking up to their own mortality. Once we can avoid panic about this, I see that this awareness of our mortality is a good thing. Death is a part of life, but for many of us, death takes place away from our awareness. It takes place behind curtains in hospital rooms, and we're not exposed to it. A new awareness of the certainty of our death and the complete uncertainty of when that death will come can, I think, only be a good thing for us as we navigate the path ahead. Whatever you believe happens after death, whether it's just an endless sleep and great nothingness, whether there's a heaven to welcome us, or whether our souls slip into some new form and new consciousness, I'm not even sure that any of that matters so much. What matters, I think, is that however invincible we might feel, we know that death awaits us, and that knowledge should influence how we choose to spend our life. Because if death is to come to me through this virus, if I suddenly get exposed and suffer and die, I want to be able to look back on how I spent my last 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, 6 months of my life. And I don't want to look back on spending that in fear and anxiety. Wherever you are in the world, I wish you well. I hope that you will get through this not only intact, but as a better person with a deeper sense of yourself and your place in the world. Humanity will get through this with a deeper understanding of our connectedness, and this understanding will allow us, I am certain, to approach the greater challenges that are to come with a global togetherness that might see us survive and flourish in harmony with each other and with the earth for many, many generations to come. I'd like to finish this podcast with a reading of a short poem by a writer called Lynn Ungar. Now, Lynn Ungar is somebody I did not know about a week ago. I discovered her because this poem and some of her other poems have been doing the rounds on social media, so you might have seen it, but I do think it's a beautiful encapsulation of this moment and this situation that we're going through. So, The poem is called Pandemic, and the poet is Lynn Unger. What if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath, the most sacred of times? Cease from travel, cease from buying and selling. Give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing, pray, touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down, and when your body has become still, reach out with your heart. Know that we are connected in ways that are terrifying and beautiful. You could hardly deny it now. Know that our lives are in one another's hands. Surely that has become clear. So do not reach out your hands. Reach out your heart. Reach out your words. Reach out all the tendrils of compassion that move invisibly where we cannot touch. Promise this world your love, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, so long as we all shall live. Thanks for listening. My love and warmth goes out to you wherever in the world you are at this time. I'll be back with more podcasts soon. Shane, bye-bye.